Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, and if you haven't been here before, welcome to the show. I hope you enjoy it. If you have been here before, welcome back. It's great to have you. So without further ado, let's get into it. My guest today is an advisor, board member to nonprofits, and a purpose-driven entrepreneur. He is CEO and founder of OnlineDegree.com. He founded the company in 2016 with a purpose-driven mission to make higher education more accessible and affordable for everyone. And as you're going to hear, he is doing just that. He has spent his entire career working in startups with nearly 15 years of experience. Now, let's hack. Grant Aldrich. Right before we get into the interview with Grant, I would like to just tell you about our sponsor, Ahrefs. When we started with Hack the Entrepreneur, trying to focus on content strategy, SEO, and driving traffic organically, we did this about 3 years ago, and we tried every single tool, every bit of software out there that we could while we were figuring it out. About 6 or 8 months into that process, we stumbled across Ahrefs. 3 years later, do we not only use it every single day for ourselves, but we also use it every day and all throughout the day to help our clients to get more traffic and to get noticed in the search engines. Ahrefs is absolutely brilliant for making competitive analysis easy. Their tools show you how your competitors are getting traffic from Google and why. And why do you need to know this? Simply because it enables you to create content that Google wants that's better than your competitors and to win their traffic, which in turn turns into your customers. If you are getting serious search traffic, you can use features like Top Pages Report to break down which of your pages are bringing in the most traffic, then figure out how to replicate this process. Do you want to learn more? Check out their blog or YouTube channel for step-by-step SEO tutorials. Plus, they have a 7-day trial for only $7. Head over to ahrefs.com to sign up. That's ahrefs.com. ahrefs.com. Sign up for your 7-day trial for just $7. All right, let's get into the interview. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Grant, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My pleasure. I'm looking forward to this. So let's just jump straight into it. Grant, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So I'm going to give the listeners a secret because I think that this key thing is the number one reason why someone's going to determine if they're successful or not in their endeavor. And that is you have to know yourself. And so I go around and I preach that the most important thing of being an entrepreneur is, again, know thyself. An ancient 3,000-year-old maxim from ancient Greece that was critical then and is critical today. And to give some background, the reason that was so important was that that inscription was written on top of before you would enter the temple of Apollo in ancient Greece, which is a god of wisdom. And in ancient Greece, the thought was, how could you know anything if you don't even know yourself? And for me, that's a key thing that is missing from every entrepreneurial discussion. Normally, when you're coming up with good ideas and you're brainstorming, one of the things I like to do as an entrepreneur is you like the exercise of coming up with ideas. And your friends who are entrepreneurs or other people, that's the fun part, right? You talk about a business plan, you talk about how you're going to make money, how do you scale it. But in my experience, what is always absent from all of those considerations of why you should start a business right? Like the normal metrics and determining, like, you know, scalability, all that is this the right business for me? And so I feel very lucky to answer your question that I went through a very introspective period to ask myself, do I know myself? What's going to make me happy? What am I good at? What am I not good at? And I challenge myself with that all the time. And I think it's made a big difference in how I've been able to make certain successes.
Ooh, I love it. A 3,000-year-old maxim. I guess it's hard for any of us to disagree with it at this point. What is something, Grant, throughout your business career at this point and knowing thyself, what is something that you've discovered about yourself from business?
Yeah, well, usually it's not positive. For example, I'm a terrible manager. It's just a reality. I'm not good at it. I don't like to do it. And so to contrast, in my last startup, I had a very traditional kind of startup environment. You know, we would drive to work. We had an office. There were employees. And I never, although I liked the people, they're all good people and they did good work, I didn't like the process of managing. It's just, I'm the kind of person where I want to give someone a task and I'm task-oriented or strategically oriented. And I don't want to be there tapping a watch or checking time cards. Not my style. I want people who are going to be able to get done what they want to do, and I don't want to have to worry about it. And so because of that, when I had that epiphany and I realized it doesn't make me happy, I'm not good at it, why on earth would you build or bake that into the cake for your next startup? So in this startup, I decided we're going to be a virtual organization, because then I don't tempt myself to time card or any of these little things. Plus, it really pushes you as a person to be more objective and goal-oriented, task-oriented, and not worried how much time the person's putting in. So I don't have to be a manager. So that would be one example. And so another one I could give to someone else would be, for example, if you want to wear board shorts every day, if you're a very casual person and that's what makes you happy, why on earth would you create a business where you have to suit up and be meeting people all day long? It's just not conducive to your happiness. And I think what happens is that people in this pursuit of success feel that they can endure something just for that success. Like, that's okay. This company is going to only take a couple of years. I will absolutely endure and suck it up. And while that's a very positive trait that someone's willing to endure that, it sets everything up wrong from the very beginning. Because one, you always underestimate how long a business is going to take to be successful. It's way longer. And I would think that the most important thing in that business, which you talk about a lot on your website, is your mindset, how positive you are as the founder. And if that is shaken, the business is going to fail. And so you have to set yourself up for success where you're happy every day.
Right. So this to me is fascinating, because it's only been, well, I would say, I guess, in this business with Hack the Entrepreneur, businesses previously, I had never built them with like an idea of what I wanted it to look like at the end. And I never really thought of it. I just built a business around an idea and something that was marketable and could sell. And it worked. But then you get to the end and it's like, oh, this sucks. This isn't what I wanted. Which is interesting, right? So there's two things with what you said there, Grant. There's that idea. Like, would you say that you need to sort of start with that end in mind?
Yeah, I think that when you're considering the business that you ultimately pursue, you have to think about these considerations. Because like you said, you picked a business, it worked well, that's awesome. But a lot of businesses, it's not really conclusive, it takes longer than they thought. And if quality of life comes into play, and perhaps for a business that was only mildly successful, maybe not successful, part of the reason why it failed was that, yeah, on paper, it looked good, had all the common things about it that we look for in a good startup idea, good idea, scalability, all those things, but it wasn't compatible with the founder.
Right, right. And so it's interesting, because also that the second point that you made at the beginning was the idea of not being a good manager. And you're saying like an idea that is compatible with the founder. Lots of people, I think, would be held back upon realizing that they're not a good manager? Because it feels like you have to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's true.
So, like, do you feel like it's more essential to become good at things you're not good at, or to just be self-aware of those things?
No, the latter. And because, you know, the reality is, there's always an aspect or an element to the fact that you have to do things that you're not good at to a small extent, and you still have to do it because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to wear a lot of hats. That's just a reality. You know, you're not staffed up like a big organization. And so no matter what, you're going to have your hand in lots of different things. But it's a key difference in that I'm doing something I don't like every day, or I'm immersed in something every day I shouldn't be immersed in, as opposed to engineering it from the beginning. So yeah, for that management example, yeah, you know, let's say in my case, I realize I'm a bad manager. I'm aware of that. And I realize I don't like it. So because of that, it fits kind of how my style has emerged, which is that certain decisions were made in the business and considerations on why I would start this business to make sure that would hold true. And that's been great. It's been so much better in this experience because I don't do that on a daily basis. I've structured everything accordingly around my strengths and weaknesses.
Wow. I love it. So this idea of coming up with this idea of a business and what it is you want to build. The last startup you were in was more traditional, going to the office. You didn't like what it sort of had become, and so you wanted to do it differently. With your self-awareness, how did the idea of online degree come up?
So what happened was 2015 for me was perhaps the greatest year of my life. And in that year, I had exited my prior startup, one that I'd been doing for about 8 years. I got married and my wife became pregnant with our first son. So it was really the best of all years. Wow. Perhaps I'll never get to another year like 2015. And so after that, I was on a course that I thought was the right one, which is, okay, you know, you got a little bit of success. Now I want to go bigger and I want to just extrapolate what I did before, but I want more employees, more this, more that. And unfortunately, and I'm lucky at the same time, I almost died while I was swimming in 2016 in February out in a surf advisory in Northern California at a very dangerous beach. And it was a storm. I definitely shouldn't have been out there, which is a whole nother part of the story, but I'm foolish for even being out there. But long story short, I got out of the water, had to go to the hospital, and it triggered a very introspective period for me over the next 6 months to really ask myself, like, it's what do I want to do? And it's sad that it takes an event like that for people to wake up and realize we're only on this earth for a limited time. We only have so many hours in the day. We only have so much we can accomplish. You might as well do it right and choose what you want to do. And at that point, I really asked myself, I kind of shelved everything I wanted. And I said, I want to do something that's meaningful. I want to do something I'm going to care about every day. I'm excited about every day. And that was in education. My whole family had been in education my whole life. It was dinner table talk my whole life. And I just felt compelled. And then the second thing was, I left college with a ton of debt. And it always bothered me that I had so much debt walking out of there. It took me all through my 20s to pay it off. And I thought, you know, it left me a sour taste. So I thought, I just started with a mission statement. How can I make education affordable and accessible for everybody? And that's how the idea emerged and everything we do emerged.
I mean, on the surface or from the outside, Grant, I mean, it sounds awesome to have this mission statement that is pretty revolutionary, I would say. And it seems so grand and big that, I mean, the divide, I guess, between a mission statement like that and like, how the hell am I going to make money seems far on the surface. So how in this did you still convince yourself that like, it's a grand statement and it's far away from what I know is a traditional business, but this is the one for me and nothing's going to stop me?
Yeah. For me, this is how it started. It was just that mission statement where, you know, a lot of other people there's a lot of ways that you can lead to an idea or start it. For example, some people just are within a business. They see there's a ton of money to be made by doing X, and they just fill that need. In this case, I truly didn't know how we would do it. And it was just the mission statement. And I knew that that mission statement was valuable, that there was a market need. You know, education or higher education is a $700 billion industry. It's massive. And I knew that there would be real value if you could come up with something that made it more affordable and more accessible. And I also knew that it was an immense challenge because you've got this industry with costs skyrocketing. I mean, you can't pick up a newspaper today without reading about the soaring cost of higher education. And to all these other market trends, like people wanting and needing to go back to school because of robot automation, globalization. So in my mind, as an entrepreneur, I saw this storm that was so clear to see through it and what needed to be done. And I just had to then figure out what the solution would be. So that's really where I started.
So then you, like, how far did you need to figure out, like, in front of you, did you need to figure out the solution to these issues before you just started building out the product and the business?
Admittedly, it was a lot. And, you know, that was one thing I didn't anticipate because I'm a big MVP kind of guy. You know, you get something up quickly so you can fail quickly. This definitely ran contrary to that, because to offer something in higher education, to really give yourself the chance to offer an MVP, you have to, you know, it's really complex what we do. So I'll explain what we do. Really what OnlineDegree.com is we're a modern alternative to the community college. So instead of, think of what that experience is, instead you can get started on our platform in 60 seconds. Take as many college level courses as you'd like to receive credit towards your degree, saving you time and money, and you can do it all for free. And so imagine how, you know, that once that epiphany came to me, that's how you have to do it, is because really the gist of it is that all of these working adults out there, this 35 to 40 million by estimate, are not taking that first step to go get the education they need and really people don't know why. And, you know, when you started thinking about it, well, I'm a working adult. I get it. Look, the current system is expensive. It's scary to someone to go back to school and think, oh, am I going to be successful in an online format? I haven't been in a classroom in 15 years. It's not conducive to a work schedule because, hey, I can't leave work at 3 p.m. every day to go drive down to community college and take a course. I mean, everything is against accessibility. So it was very clear what needed to be done was just to remove all these impediments that would stop those people from taking that first step. And this was the platform to do it. And so that was kind of like the genesis of it anyhow, of how we got there. And just to kind of give some background.
Right. And then, so I guess at that point, then you're not an educator yourself. You have to come up with some educators to build out a product. And then you have to actually go out and get your customers.
Exactly.
So it's not like software where you can just build it and, like, sort of in the background. It's like you have to find teachers who can teach.
Right. So to your question, which was, you know, how was this? Was it fast to get up? No, it was very challenging, because if that's your offering, you have to do quite a bit to get that up. Like you said, you know, you have to have professors, you have to have courses, you have to have partnerships with the institutions. It's a very complex thing, in fact, very complex, to make it simple for the consumer. And so it took me about 2 years to even just get all these things in place to get it off the ground for our launch and have it prepared, which, again, if you're a believer of lean startups, would be just like an astronomical amount of time.
Right. But still, I mean, it's easy for me to say. I wasn't there for 2 years while you were, like, just itching to get live. So it's
sweating bullets, by the way, too, right? Because if you go for 2 years, you always then begin to doubt yourself that, oh my gosh, I've had blinders on with my head down for 2 years. Is this really the path, or is this really what the market wants? All kinds of doubt start to circle you. And so when we did go that launch, believe me, my anxiety level was incredibly high, because you question, did I pick the right path? Luckily for us, when we launched, we did a soft launch in 2018. And the soft launch was just like, hey, welcome. Here's what we're going to do. You can pre-register for courses. We had 1,000 people pre-register with no marketing whatsoever in that first month before we launched. It was just, it was the most amazing launch I've ever had in my whole career.
Wow. Without marketing.
So no marketing.
I'm going to say, I guess is that like 3 years ago at this point?
It was in, let's see, two years ago. Cause actually the soft launch was in May of 2018 and we fully launched in July of 18. So 2 years ago.
Wow. So July 2018, full launch. How long could you continue without marketing and still growing?
You're right. That's a tough question to ask because I'm sure we would have still brought people in and word of mouth is definitely a big driver for us. When you look at our analytics, direct is a huge portion, but so I'm not really sure, but yeah, I wasn't going to allow that to persist. It was just that I didn't feel it was prudent to start spending marketing dollars in our pre-launch because we couldn't do anything at that point. Then we reserved that for when we fully launched. And then, since then, I don't know what the alternative would have been.
Right. Okay. So direct is still a big part of your driver now. And obviously you can't go back and change it. So you don't know what the difference in effect would have been. But today, like I want to call them customers, but they're students. Where are your students coming from?
Yeah, all over. I mean, if you think about it, our student is, just to kind of give you the demographic, our student is the working adult. And that's something that most people don't realize that's changed about higher education. Higher education's main constituent is not the 18-year-old coming out of high school. That population is dwindling. It's the working adult who needs to upskill in the face of all of this adversity with those trends I alluded to earlier, like robot automation. It's coming, it's wiping out jobs, globalization, things like that. So our person's anywhere from, 24 to 45, and they find us all over the place, through just Google searching. We're on a lot of the forums where people can hack their way to a degree. We do social media marketing, like on Facebook, because one of the big challenges we have, of course, is that most people don't realize that there is an alternative to this ingrained higher education system that they know, right? Everybody just assumes, really the only ways I can save going to college is community college and maybe some scholarships. And, I've been a big proponent that neither of those are true. And so, we're really trying to just beat the drum that there's a more viable third option.
Right. Okay. So that brings me to a question I wanted to get to, but let's talk about this because it feels like to me education, like you educating potential students. So not education as in what you're teaching, but like you actually educating people on this viable option to something that when this was first presented to me, onlinedegree.com, which was only in the last couple months, and I'm sure I've seen it around, but not that it seemed like on the surface, like hokey, that's not the right word, but it seems like there's a catch. Like there has to be a catch. Like there's no such thing as free education in America. It just doesn't exist. But if you start reading through your FAQs and stuff, it's like, oh wow, this actually is. This is actually how it works. Yeah. But that's a long sort of process of marketing if it would have taken me all that time, but I was just researching you trying to figure it out.
You're right. We get that all the time. And to be honest, I do kind of take that as a kind of part of personal pride, right? Because that is the number one thing we get is that two things people say, it sounds too good to be true. And I wish this was around when I went to school. And so to your point, if you're going to, when you finally realize that you need to have a platform for people to come in, get their feet wet, see if education's right for them, alleviate their concerns that they can be successful in an online environment, right? Get them excited to learn again, figure out what they want to be, right? Once your platform does all that, it has to be free because you want to remove those barriers for people to take that first step. So when I was creating the business model, I knew that it has to be free. And so then, of course, what it did was it really pushed us to figure out, well, then how are you going to make money? How do you pay for it? Because tuition is so synonymous with higher education. And the beauty is by us thinking beyond that, just being brave enough, honestly, to move out of that paradigm, We came up with a model that's far better, where our model is completely supported by the universities. So how does that work? The value of the student is probably very obvious in that, yes, I can save time and money towards my degree, thousands of dollars, get there faster, explore things I want to explore. That's obvious. But the universities get an immense benefit as well, because for them, they are desperate for good students. And when I say good, I mean students who are prepared to learn, who are motivated to finish their degree, who've now used a modern learning management system and have become acclimated to online learning and don't need other resources from the university for that kind of training. All of these things. And so when a student moves through our platform, unbeknownst to them, they actually become better students and more desirable to the schools. And the schools sponsor everything. So what we've done is we've aligned everyone's interests, the school, the student, and of course ours with the business model to help everybody.
So you're funded by the schools.
Correct.
So we, like, again, on the surface, Grant, it looks like you're taking the schools head on, but you're not. You're like an additional service to them.
Exactly. That's right. You know, we're not, our approach is not antithetical or diametrically opposed to the universities. In fact, I actually look at us as being a savior to the U.S. higher education market. I really do. Because I'll tell you guys another couple of some interesting statistics. So higher education, $700 billion industry, has been on the decline. And for all the reasons we probably would just, it would seem intuitive and we know. But online education is rapidly growing, and this is before COVID, and is growing at a very rapid pace. That's what, and the only growth that's been happening. So there has been a decline of demand for higher education for all those reasons I talked about that we started this in the first place. And so what I'm trying to do is to still keep people on a university path, but remove all of the bad sides about it. Because if you took someone off the street and you said to them, hey, if every other consideration aside, in a perfect world, would you want a college degree on X? They would say yes. But when you start adding what the cost is and all of the other things that have to be considered, the time, the cost, then they say, maybe not. So I think everything's just become out of balance. And so I'm trying to bring all of that back into balance to make the value proposition a no-brainer.
How hard of a pitch is this to schools?
It's interesting you bring that up. Not hard at all. And I should caveat to the schools that get it, and I'll come back to that. So one of the things that was, of course, a big unknown when we first started this was, what would the adoption be like on the university side? Because ultimately, we have to have partners on the university side to make this possible. Because we're not a university. You know, our organization is a non-collegiate organization that partners, we provide the courseware and we work with universities for the students to get credit. So they're a key piece in this. And we've had a phenomenal adoption from the universities. It's just been incredible. Because they get it and they see what you saw as well, John, which is that we're not diametrically opposed. We're not competing with them. We're trying to help make them more accessible. So we've gotten a very warm reception. We got big partners coming in every day, state schools, private schools, you know, all different types. And the schools that have really gotten it are the schools that were already more adult friendly, who are online based, who have services for adults. I would say the ones that are avant-garde, and there's a lot of them.
Right. And I guess being in a $700 billion a year industry, even sort of like small sectors of that are still massive markets.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, people don't realize how many schools there actually are in the U.S. There's, if you ask them off the street how many there are, they would be dramatically off. There's almost 7,000. Hard to believe. And let's just say if you whittle it down to like the four-year university that we all have in our minds when we think of a college, there's probably 2,500. That's a lot of schools. And so there are definitely a lot of groups out there within that where you can get a huge critical mass of options for students based on whatever their needs are, degree needs, style, what all of that is, with a small subset of that.
Wow. So now since 2018, so 2 years on pretty much right now with your full launch, what does the team of online degree look like?
Yeah. So we're still back, you know, kind of going back to our original roots. We're completely virtual. We have everybody working on their own projects, all based on the vision and the goals of the organization. So we've got, you know, development, we've got our coursework, we've got our student support, and everything runs really well because I think I would attribute it to a couple of things. One, it was in our DNA from the beginning. Two, we've got a very clear mission statement and very clear objective of what we do. Because I think that's one nice thing is that something that's, I think, very discounted in success is that if you have a good mission statement and you attract people who are also appealed to that mission, at least in theory. Because, you know, for example, in most startups, they have to do all these different things, like in terms of employee perks to keep people there. Like, oh, free food and free snacks. Well, we don't do any of that. Because for one, we don't have an office. And two, I think that's actually almost condescending. We give you guys snacks. No, instead, I'm giving you the ability to do meaningful work in your daily life. That is awesome. And do something you care about. And I'm going to find the people who care about this and we'll hire them. And what that also does is it solves a lot of your management challenges. Because again, people aren't working because they get free snacks. They're working because they care. And when you have that good direction, you don't have to check in on them. They're already motivated. They already know what you're supposed to be doing. It all solves itself. And I feel very fortunate that we had that from the very beginning.
I love it. I love it. And I think you're right with the snacks. But so let's say take one of, I'm not sure what you called these groups, like you said, development, coursework, student support. But say we just looked at, say, development. When you said they'll work on their own projects, how does a project within development, and if it changes from group to group, that's fine too. But I would love to know just how an idea comes from or within the team or where it comes from, and then how it actually gets approved and pushed forward as something that you should be spending your time and energy on.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and again, this is what works for us, and this may not work for everybody, but strategically, usually what happens is I kind of bring in the big projects and I will come up and say, look, here's the initiative we have to be working on right now. Because I'm in that position as CEO to understand where we need to be going and all of the pieces interconnected. So as a CEO founder, you're still in that spot. You're never going to extricate yourself. And that's great because you're the one who should be making those decisions. And so I will say, look, we have to be working on, let's say, X project, and then we're going to be working on Y. And this is the big initiative, and this is what we're going to be doing. Now, for everybody, that's kind of what guides us. But in terms of, let's say there's an improvement that needs to be made on the website, because we're giving this example on dev. Everyone's empowered to absolutely take advantage, to feel emboldened to make those decisions themselves within those confines. So for example, if there's something broke, no, they don't have to send a ticket to me and then I have to approve a ticket. No. I trust you. I want you to spend to make sure you hit the goal of whatever our goal is for initial X and all these other things. Whatever you think is the best fix that you apply your time, go ahead and do it. So what it does is it creates a much lighter organization where, and again, it's more goal oriented as opposed to where you see all these software and development startups where it all just becomes tickets flying back and forth and everybody loses sight of the forest in the trees.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And I like that you, as the CEO, sort of you bring the big ideas to the different groups within the team. How do you then, Grant, as the CEO, decide and determine those big projects?
Yeah, you know, that's always challenging. A lot of times it's based on what the market, what we've been seeing that's working. I'm a big believer that you have to, you try, even though I didn't preach this in the very beginning when we launched, by working lean and testing things rapidly. Since it's been up, that's definitely come back into play. And so, for example, we'll try something. Hey, don't overthink this. Build something out. Let's see if it works. See if it's in demand. If it works, fantastic. Let's invest more in that. It's a very iterative process. You know, we try not to do massive, large projects where we get bogged down for a long period of time, very lean. And then two, I really try to embolden all of our people to figure out the details. Like, they know me now. Most people I work with, I've worked with for years, and they know me now. And so if I say, look, here's the initiative that we want to do. We want to change this and make it more functional or whatever it is. I don't want to get in the details. I mean, I want to give some direction from a high level, but I want them to really be able to figure it out. So I think that's a key thing to not being a manager, is that you have to trust that these people will provide what you're expecting based on the goal.
So I know myself and people listening are thinking to themselves right now, Grant, damn, he sounds like actually a really good manager.
Well, thank you. Somebody who
feels like he's not. It sounds like you've really got a good grasp on it. I'm sure your team agrees.
Well, you know what? Okay, well, thank you. But here I would say this, and I'll be totally open about this. I love being personal. I don't love, like, I'll tell you where I would say the con is. And for some people, this wouldn't be positive. When I get on the phone with somebody, I love talking with them. It's always friendly. There's no stuffy, rigid boss employee boundaries like that. I think that's lame. But the other thing is, I don't call and see how you're doing all the time, and sometimes that silence or absence, people would mistake for, well, does he not care about the work I'm doing? Is he not pleased? No, I'm just working on something else. So it could cut two ways. And that's why I think it's a really important thing that you bring in people who fit your style. Because yeah, I'm not going to check in and give you a pep talk every day. Not going to do it.
Right. And if you know that about yourself and you've communicated that to the team and that's how they work best too, then it just works out for everyone.
Exactly. Yep.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, Grant. Well, I've totally loved this conversation, but we do need to wrap up. And I'd like to do that on one final question, if I could.
Okay.
It's this idea I've been working with over the years of interviewing people, this idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So there seems to be this place we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, where no matter what we accomplish personally and professionally, we still never see ourselves as successful. From the outside, we can look really, really successful. But from the inside, it's always when you're going to hit that next metric or stand on that next stage or whatever it is you want to attain, you and I both know, Grant, that right before you hit that, you're just going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. And it is arguable that that's worth doing. But rather than looking forward right now, I'd love it if you could stop and look behind you. So you've been at this for, I believe, about 15 years with businesses. There's been highs, lows, wins, and losses, and I'm sure we have not talked about nearly all of them. But I would love to hear, how do you feel about this journey up until today?
That's a really great question. And I would say that gap, because the way I'm framing this, is that gap to me is not knowing thyself. Back to the initial point, because you're right. There are tons of people who are incredibly successful, and yet they always appear to be unhappy. And I think so. I think that those have to be decoupled, in that you could be incredibly talented, your business acumen is amazing, and you'll be successful in what that traditional term of financially successful, but you won't be happy. And that is, to me, the biggest travesty. And that is how I would explain my prior 15 years. Was that I don't think I was very happy despite getting that good outcome. And I think that only when we really understand and know ourselves, we ask those tough questions, we know what's going to make us happy, do you really start to change things in your life and enjoy the journey, enjoy every day? That's really, it shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be hard to just be happy every day, right? If you, looking back from your deathbed, say, hey, stupid, just be happy. You would think that that would be easy. It's not. And that, I think, is the big challenge. That's the gap.
Wow. I love it. Beautiful answer. So simple and clear. And I love how you tied it back perfectly to your intro. And I mean, I think a hard part, just to sort of elaborate on it, I think a hard part, and correct me if your thinking is different, but I think a hard part with knowing that thyself is that, I mean, especially you're running a business that's growing, you as the CEO and founder, you have to constantly grow either at that same speed or faster so you don't get run over by the company.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, businesses become more demanding. And I think all of us know after being an entrepreneur that it's truly a black hole of time because you're so committed to it being successful that you can spend an infinite amount of time. And I think the problem is, at least for me, is that I've definitely fell victim to that, where I would just sit in the office late through my 20s, where I was spending my time so poorly, where I wasn't asking myself, am I doing what I should be doing right now? And all these more fundamental questions. And so, yes, ultimately, I think you're right. It's the siren song, being an entrepreneur, because you've obviously taken on a lot of risk. There's a lot of pressure. It's scary. You don't know all the answers. There's no rules to this game. There's no playbook. It's the most exhilarating challenge and the most difficult thing you'll ever do, short of being a parent. And so, you know, everything you just said is correct. And it's just, you have to manage that throughout the whole process and be happy and enjoy it.
Again, very well said. So we've talked about online degree all through this. It seems like a fascinating and brilliant business to me. Could you now tell the listener, Grant, specifically who it's for and how you can help?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously, you know, people can go to the website, onlinedegree.com. And what's really exciting is it's obviously, we try to figure out what's best for anybody to go back and get the education they need. And so we started with the degree side, like we discussed. But what's even more exciting now is we've opened it up to certifications. So what we've done is people don't realize this, but there are tons of careers out there that you can start working at within a few months at a fraction of the cost of a degree and have a really nice paying job and salary that you're going to be happy at. So we've expanded into that completely, where we go out, get discounts for you and figure out what that best program is. And so it's onlinedegree.com/certifications. That's going to be coming. And that's a really big, exciting thing too. So really it's for anybody who wants to improve their lives, you know, get a better, more fulfilling career, better paying career. And would love to have them just follow us and what we're doing, even if it's not for them at the site.
Awesome. Onlinedegree.com is the site. They're on all the social platforms as well. I'll get links to those and put them in the show notes for you so they're easy to find. And also, Grant is somewhat active on LinkedIn. So if you want to just know and learn more about him and how he's thinking about this business as it grows, then you can find him on LinkedIn, or I will also drop that link in the show notes for you. Grant, this has been an awesome conversation that I've really, really, really enjoyed being part of. Just thank you so much for stopping by, especially on the short notice. Thanks for sharing so openly with myself and the audience. And man, just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome to watch.
John, thanks for having me, man. Really, I love your show. And this was really an honor to be on here and to share all this. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I truly, truly enjoyed that. And I hope that you did too. You've probably gained some real insights into business that you could use yourself, but also how Grant has run his business and is continuing to. And you've also possibly heard of this whole new form of online degrees, which to me is also fascinating in the fact that he and the team at Online Degree is taking on and trying to sort of revolutionize such a massive and important market, yet also one to kind of break into and change. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website for the podcast. You can head over there under the podcast tab. You will find Grant's episode there. If you want to learn any more about him, we'll have all links of things we talked about, including his business and some social media and maybe some other places we've tracked him down online. It'll all be there for you once you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you happen to be doing right now. And while you're over there, check out the rest of the site. Check out the blog. We've been blogging a lot, and I think that you might like it over there. All right. Well, I hope the rest of your summer goes as well as the start has gone for you. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.